Our last case for argument today is case number 22-1077, Pogarna Engineered Stone versus United States. Is it, counsel, how do I pronounce your last name? Is it Stoll?
Yes, Your Honor.
Oh, good. Okay, Mr. Stoll, please proceed.
May it please the court. This case is about the government's refusal to hear the views of hundreds of American manufacturing companies and thousands of American manufacturing workers. Specifically, this case involves assertions by U.S. producers of quartz surface products, your kitchen countertops, Your Honors, of dumped imports from India.
Isn't it basically about the definition of producers and whether fabricators are producers?
Yes, Your Honor. The Commerce Department defined domestic quartz surface products to include fabricated quartz. And yet, when thousands of quartz fabricators asked that their views on the trade case be heard by Commerce, the government decided that they couldn't do that, Your Honors. This was unlawful and not supported by substantial evidence. Why does this matter, Your Honors? The governing statute and the legislative history both show that Congress wanted the views of domestic producers to be heard. In order for the Commerce Department to conduct an anti-dumping investigation on the basis of a petition, such as the one at issue here that my friend from Cambria filed, those in support of the petition must account for at least 25% of the total production of the domestic light product and, Your Honors, more than 50% of the production of the domestic light product produced by members of the industry expressing a position on the petition.
Can I just ask you a kind of housekeeping? I think there's a footnote on footnote 129 where the court says that the petition still has industry support even with fabricated data included, and the suggestion being that this was anything harmless error. Why don't we begin and end this case there?
I guess, Your Honor. First of all, I think the court is incorrect. There are actually four different cases, all of which we've now focused on this one case, presuming dumping from India. Even on the basis of the information submitted by the fabricators to the Commerce Department, there is in fact evidence that the case should not go forward. But more importantly, Your Honor, Commerce is putting, and the court, the trial court, put the cart before the horse. I mean, Commerce had already decided the fabricators were not part of the domestic industry, and then it did its calculations. That can't be the basis for answering the question of whether you included fabricators. The case shouldn't go forward. Furthermore, as we pointed out in our briefs, Your Honors, the agency has the ability, set forth by Congress, to pull the industry. They can find out what's going on. That's particularly important, Your Honors, where here, in just a few days, really a week, Your Honor, my clients submitted 270 declarations from fabricators accounting for 5,800 American workers. That's 5,800 American workers, Your Honor.
Counsel, that's not in front of us. That's not before us. That's not part of this case. Focus on the case. Go back to Judge Lurie's question, which I think is what this case is all about, which are fabricators producers? Focus on the statute. Tell me how I should define producers. I mean, you just want to speak in terms of rhetoric like you're on a pulpit. You're not. You're in a court. So focus on the law.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the key point here, Your Honor, and I think the parties agree to this, is that the word producers is not defined in the statute. And so the question is, can this court interpret the word in a way consistent with the statute and, I think, the statutory intent? And our belief, Your Honors, is that the term producer should be interpreted in accordance with its ordinary terms set forth in the statute.
But haven't we in the past actually sustained Commerce's determination of producer under the sufficient production-related activities test?
Actually, Your Honor, that issue of the production-related activities test was not directly before this court. It was addressed by the USEC court in the case below. And then, Your Honor, Judge Prost addressed the broader question of domestic industry in the Eurodef decision. But I think there's a couple important points about Eurodef that really actually support our side, Your Honor. First, that case involved a situation where the facts do matter. That case involved an unquestioned situation where the folks trying to be heard as producers, they didn't produce anything.
But can we go back to the Chief's question before we get into the intricacies of Eurodef, which is, are you saying that what they came up with is the test that they've come up with, a sufficiency or relatedness, is wrong?
Your Honor, I think that I think that in a situation like this one, where it's unquestioned that the producers actually made the domestic light product. You don't need to go on to a test like that. We know that they made a domestic light product, and thus they qualify as producers. Again, petitioner and the Commerce Department defined the domestic light product to include fabricated quartz. It's unquestioned that the producers of fabricated quartz thus should be considered to be producers. And I think, Your Honor, that the statutory interpretation that you and your court offered, which is a substantial or important manufacturing, is the test here. That very much supports us. You don't need to go further. We know that they, in fact, did that. So we don't need to apply a six-factor test. Now, Your Honor, we certainly believe, as we pointed out, that if you want to go to the six-factor test, that the substantial evidence doesn't support the application of that test. But we don't believe that here, application of that test is lawful. And I think that there's an important statutory construction issue here, Your Honor, which is the statute says once somebody is considered to be a domestic producer, as I said, they make the domestic light product, so they are a domestic producer. Then the statute, per Congress, gives two reasons under which commerce may exclude. It says either you're related, you shall exclude, or if you're an importer, you may exclude. It doesn't talk about a six-factor test. It doesn't give commerce any additional discretion. It prescribes, Congress specifically prescribed two examples for how producers may be excluded. And Commerce Department didn't invoke either one of those exceptions in this case, Your Honor. I think that the canon of expressio unis est exclusion altiarius, I always hate pronouncing that, shows that you can't have another test when Congress has already given you the two tests. I also think, Your Honor, going back to the Uradiff case, that this case is very different, as I said. And this is why Chief Judge Moore, the facts do matter. In that case, it was very clear that the utilities did not produce the domestic light product. That was unquestioned. They were trying to bootstrap their standing as a domestic producer, relying on a now-defunct regulation. I think that also goes to the question of commerce's ability to interpret the law here. They could interpret their own regulation, and this court showed deference to the interpretation of that regulation at the time. They cannot interpret the statute without this court's oversight.
Counsel, I think that one of, unless I'm wrong, the government's arguments, which I'd like you to address, is that while your client might ultimately be working on something, which is a domestic-like product, not all degrees of processing a domestic-like product qualify someone as a producer of that product. I think the government's argument is that there are lots of hands a domestic-like product could move through, and not all those hands are necessarily to be defined as producers of a domestic-like product. Is that a fair characterization of what you understand the government to be arguing?
I think that is one of the government's arguments, Your
Honor. How do you respond to that? Because you would like to link the fact that your clients are involved in some form of modification of a domestic-like product to necessarily require them to be held to be producers. And so why is the government wrong when they say not everyone's hands through which a domestic-like product would pass make them producers? That seems right to me. So how do you respond to that?
Your Honor, I think it's incorrect for a simple reason, which is, in this case, the petitioner and then Commerce made an election, okay? They decided that quartz service products should include fabricated or not quartz service products. Once they made that election, a producer of a fabricated quartz service product was therefore included in the domestic light product. My friends across the aisle could have decided, we're just going to define the domestic light product as being slabs, which is basically like this table before
okay,
it's actually been made.
Let me give you a hypothetical. These
sure.
are going to be fun. So imagine that there is a baker who makes cookies, and then there are my children that break them into crumbles and eat the bits of the cookies, okay? Who is the producer? And I say cookies and cookie parts are all part of cookies. Are my children now the producers of the cookies because they were the ones that broke them into pieces? I don't think so. It seems to me the baker is the producer of the cookies. But I would still define both the cookies and the broken cookies as all cookies.
Excellent analogy, Your Honor. First of all, actually, I do think that your children are the producers of those crumbled cookies is the fun argument. And I think, actually, the Commerce Department agreed with that. They included the fabricated quartz that was made by the folks who also made the slab, the basic product. But what your analogy, I think, doesn't take into account is that there are also hundreds of other people over there making cookies and crumbling them. And what the Commerce Department did is it focused only on your children's cookies. It forgot about the fact that there are thousands of other people also making cookies and crumbling those cookies, to stay with your analogy. And that is what we assert is unlawful.
But again, I thought that they were willing to entertain all of the people who make cookies, just not the people who break them up.
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's right, because it probably depends on what you're talking about is cookies. But at the end of the day, the domestic leg product includes both fabricated and unfabricated quartz. And so that's a bigger universe, to use your analogy.
I know, but I just, the problem for me is I don't see that the people who are participate in creating the fabricated quartz tops are necessarily producers of the fabricated quartz. I still think it might be the stone suppliers. And that is where we have the fundamental problem, because the statute doesn't define the word producers. And that's where it kind of feels like maybe the deference should go to the government to figure out a reasonable test to how to sort that through, because it's not immediately self-evident to me how to do it.
Well, Your Honor, I think actually the good news is that the Eurodif court already did it for us. They defined the test as being substantial or important manufacturing. And I think when you look at this record, this court can make a decision as to whether its application of the word substantial or important, as it set forth in Eurodif, makes sense. And I would point the court, actually, to my friend from Cambria, his brief at 41. What did they say there? They conceded, to Your Honor's questions about the cookies and the crumbling, that one-third...
Okay, get away from that. It was a stupid hypo. I admit it. It was dumb. Move on. Talk about your court stops.
One-third of the cost, it's admitted by my friend, comes from fabricators. Okay, that's substantial or important. I think we can interpret those ordinary words. Secondly, my friend conceded that fabricators on average...
Shouldn't all that go to the factors that ought to be used to assess who is a producer? It doesn't necessarily automatically require someone to be deemed a producer.
No, Your Honor, I think that there's a fundamental question of statutory interpretation, which is you can interpret the word producer and you know whether somebody or not is a producer or not. I would point you to the dictionary definitions that we offered. And I think this court has said, you know, in Mass General and other cases, that this court is the one to interpret, you know, basic words of the statute, not the agency. And so I think when you look at fundamental facts like the ones I told you and the definitions of the word, you can interpret that in this case, the only answer could be that fabricators are in fact producers. I don't think that this is something that should be subject to the government's discretion. And so there may be a time, as we said in our brief.
You probably want to save some of your rebuttal time, don't you?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, Mr. Kurland?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This Court should sustain the Department of Commerce's determination in this case because it is both lawful and because it is supported by substantial evidence. Regarding the lawfulness of Commerce's determination, this case is controlled by this Court's previous decision in Eurodif, which affirmed as reasonable Commerce's application of the same test in the same context as it did in this case. Specifically, the Court recognized, as the trial court had and as the Court of International Trade in previous cases had before it, that the term producer in the statute is undefined, and that what we've all termed the sufficient production-related activities test that was applied in that case was a reasonable interpretation. Commerce then applied that test in this case. And in doing so, over and above the Chevron deference issue, Commerce engaged in a reasonable line-drawing exercise to implement what's an undefined term in the statute, producers. And even before and after Chevron, this Court has recognized that that's the type of determination that warrants a lot of deference. Even MSI recognizes at some level, and this is at page 25, footnote 2 of their brief, that there has to be some distinction between those who produce and those who take an existing product and process it. And what Commerce engaged in was a line-drawing exercise to say, where do you draw the line? At what level of processing do you become a producer?
So what's the standard of review here? What analysis are we doing? We're doing Chevron 2? We're doing our? Or what do we do in this context?
Right. Well, it's a Chevron 2 analysis. I think my point was, even if you didn't have Chevron, I mean, this court before and after Chevron has deferred to these type of line-drawing exercises. But the trial court in this case analyzed it as a Chevron Step 2 issue. The trial court in Eurodiff analyzed it as a Chevron Step 2 issue. And then this court, invoking the language of Chevron Step 2, upheld Commerce's determination as reasonable. So I submit it's a Chevron Step 2 issue.
Am I right in understanding that you began by suggesting that Eurodiff actually already decided this issue?
Well, it decided the legal issue to the extent that the plaintiff's appellant's argument, I mean, they haven't really argued Chevron Step 2. You can say that they waived that issue. They have rested their case entirely on a Chevron Step 1 issue. And both the USEC 2 decision below in the trial court and then this court's decision in Eurodiff recognize this as a Chevron Step 2 issue and upheld Commerce's interpretation of the statute as reasonable under Chevron Step 2. So the extent that they're saying this is a Chevron Step 1 issue, that issue has already passed in Eurodiff as a legal matter. Obviously, each case has...
You can't argue here that producers is clear enough, it doesn't have any exclusions, so we read it broadly. We as a court are the ones that interpret statutes. That's their argument, right? What's wrong with that?
Well, I think this court in Eurodiff has already recognized that it was an undefined term. Certainly, the trial court was clear, specific about that in the USEC case that led to Eurodiff. This court cited the Brother decision that also recognized producers was undefined and treated it as a Chevron Step 2 issue, not as a Chevron Step 1 issue. And I think one important aspect of Eurodiff that relates to the appellant's effort to distinguish that case is that this issue, I mean, each case has its own facts, but this issue came up precisely because the Eurodiff appellants were making an argument that's analogous to the argument here. They were saying, if you look at Commerce's tolling regulation, which is now defunct, that's not really relevant, we are defined as producers for purposes of Commerce's analysis. We are undisputedly, quote-unquote, producers for other purposes in Commerce's analysis, the actual anti-dumping analysis. And so we must be treated as producers for purposes of the industry support determination. And both the Court of International Trade and this Court said, no, that's not correct. It is reasonable for Commerce to employ the sufficient production-related activities test to define who's
Wait,
a producer.
Did Eurodiff embrace the sufficient production-related activities test?
It upheld Commerce's application of that test as reasonable, and it said that Commerce's interpretation, consistent with the legislative history that says a company has to have a stake in the industry, and further defining that as employing substantial or important production process, the way that Commerce implements that is through the test that it applies. And I think that this court did uphold Commerce's application of that test in that case. And in fact, ever since then, this is the test that Commerce has employed. Turning to the substantial evidence issue, first of all, I think it is important to note that Commerce made a determination in this case, and I'm just going to quote it, because it relates to the colloquy that Your Honors were having with appellant's counsel. They found, quote, that the fabrication process does not change the fundamental physical characteristics imparted during the slab production process. That's at appendix page 1030. More broadly, just widening the lens a little bit, Commerce made two important findings on the substantial evidence issue. The first is that they found that that there were quote-unquote significant differences between the process of producing quartz slabs and the type of processing that fabricators engaged in with respect to the complexity, the investment, the equipment, the employment, and the training and expertise. All of those things, significant differences between quartz slab production and the fabrication process. It also found that fabricators essentially are taking an existing quartz surface product, that someone else produced and cutting it for its end use. And along the way, they further found that these quartzite production process provided the bulk of the value of the actual end products. So it is a matter of line drawing, and this court, for example, in the Hager Apparel decision that we cited, has said that, you know, at the margins, reasonable minds may ultimately disagree about who should be in or who should be out, but that's clearly not this court's role. The court doesn't reweigh the evidence.
Well, I think they make something out of a statement that the government made at some point that fabricators produce final fabricated products, to be some sort of concession by the government or acknowledgement that Congress viewed fabrication as fabricators as producers. Why isn't that compelling or important?
I think we would respectfully disagree with their characterization. If one goes back and reads Commerce's determination, the one in this case at page 1025 to 1032 of the record, I think it's fair to say at places they picked up the fabricator's arguments. So the place that I see is they talk about what the quartz slab domestic industry described as its production process, and they list the seven steps, and then they describe what the fabricators list as their, you know, quote-unquote production process and list the four steps, and they say these are very different. The one is way more complex than the others, and we don't find that fabricators are producers for industry support purposes. Commerce has consistently, and for the most part even used consistent language, to say that this type of processing does not amount to being a producer. And I should add that, again,
I don't think you're answering Chief Judge Prost's question. Her question wasn't for you to reanalyze all the facts that Commerce analyzed in assessing who producers were. Her question is, how do you address their argument that Commerce previously found that produced fabricated slabs are domestic-like products? And they found that separate and apart from the unperfected slabs. They found two things qualify, right? Slabs and the fabricated slabs. Well, who is the producer of fabricated slabs? Seems like the fabricator, right? So we've got two things that qualify as domestic or domestic-like products. Slabs, okay, those are clearly the importers of the slabs, and fabricated slabs. Who's the producer of a fabricated slab? Tell me.
Right.
Who is the producer of a fabricated slab?
Right. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think I misunderstood the question. Without getting into Your Honor's cookie hypothetical, the answer is no. There's not something significant to the fact that slabs or, fabricated products are produced in domestic, included in domestic-like product, because it's exactly as Your Honor described it. The products as a whole are included. So you wouldn't just want the quartz slabs included, because then everyone would just import the fabricated products, you know, the cut version of the products, and you wouldn't have a decent anti-dumping duty order. But there are numerous cases, and we've cited a number of them, the chlorinated isocyanamates, the calcium hypochlorite, even the magnets case. And in the magnets case, by the way, the folks who were excluded were literally described as fabricated.
You're talking at lightning speed.
I'm sorry.
To slow down.
Sure.
I can't follow you quite as quick as you're talking.
Sure.
And I want to hear your argument.
It's common in this practice that something might be included in the scope of what's covered by the anti-dumping duty order without the people who are engaged in some form of processing of that product to be considered producers. For example, in the magnets case that's cited in the briefing, as well as the chlorinated isocyanamates and the calcium hypochlorite. But in the magnets case, folks were literally described as fabricators. The magnets come in sheets. They were cutting them. They were putting holes in them. They were making, you know, forming them. But they weren't ultimately considered producers. What I'm trying to say, Your Honors, is that the type of scenario that Your Honor is asking at is pretty common. The hypothetical I came up with, not cookies, but this court has a lot of cases that involve piping and piping systems. But when Commerce does industry support for those cases, the U.S. government doesn't bring in all the plumbers who deal with those systems and maybe fabricating them into the pipes in our house and say, all those folks are the producers of the pipes. We could go through a lot of different hypotheticals and a lot of different ways to cut it, but at the end of the day, this is a line-drawing exercise. Commerce has to employ a test to say, okay, where does fabricators, you know, where does processing end and production begin? It's important to recognize here that MSI is not a fabricator.
You're co-counsel's time, which is fine by us, but if you want to share with them.
Fair enough. I'll wrap up. MSI is not a fabricator. It's an importer of foreign products who then got a bunch of fabricators to come in and say, they sell to fabricators, and then they got fabricators to come in and say, we oppose this petition. So that's the context here. This decision should be sustained. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, this is Luke Meisner on behalf of Cambria Company, LLC. I'm going to start with my own hypothetical. Let's say a friend makes a cake. He procures, measures, mixes all the ingredients, pours the mixtures into a pan, bakes it in the oven.
Did you come up with this just now? Or
I had this before, Your Honor. I like your cookie and the cookie crumble hypothetical that I had this prepared.
Okay, well, I mean, since you spent so much time working on this analogy, go ahead.
If my friend bakes the cake, I cut the cake, and I plate it, and I serve it to my guests, do I get to say that I made the cake because it's cut cake and not a cake that came fresh out of the pan? That is precisely the question that Commerce faced in the proceedings below.
I feel like you would claim that you made the cake. I'm just making a judgment call.
It's something my dad would probably do to my mom, you know, but it doesn't make it right. That is precisely the question that Commerce faced in the proceedings below, whether fabricators who cut and install slabs of quartz surface products made by companies like Cambria are producers of those products. Commerce had to answer this question because the largest U.S. importer, the appellant in this case, MSI, gathered fill-in-the-blank declarations from 270 fabricators who cut and sell imports, stating that they opposed Cambria's petitions against imports from India. Fabricators are the biggest customers of producers like Cambria. They can purchase domestically produced products from my client Cambria, or they can purchase imports from a company like MSI. The statute does not define producer. Thus, to resolve this question, Commerce applied a six-factor test to determine whether fabricators are producers. In Eurodiff, this court upheld that same test as a reasonable interpretation of the statute.
I don't know. I don't know that we decided the question of what the interpretation of the statute should be so much as we upheld its application in Eurodiff.
If you look at the remand proceeding in Eurodiff, which was subsequently upheld by the CIT and then later this court, the court sort of characterizes the six-factor test that Commerce applied as interpreting the term producer to mean a company that has a stake in the domestic industry, meaning it has substantial operations and substantial manufacturing operations. Commerce simply, you know, down below in the remand proceeding had expanded substantial manufacturing operations to mean an entity that has sufficient production-related activities such that it could be a producer, someone who has a stake in the domestic industry. I think MSI's the resort to the plain and ordinary meaning of the term producer does not resolve the problem faced by Commerce. Most dictionaries define produce as taking raw materials or components to bring something new of use into existence. I see my time is up, so I'll just wrap up. These definitions apply to slab producers who consume raw quartz and resin to bring quartz slabs into existence. These definitions would not apply to fabricators who take an existing product for use, something that is already part of the domestic-like product, covered by the scope, touch it, cut it, they can polish it, do some kind of other processing, and then sell it to the downstream consumer, someone like you or me. So for all these reasons, we believe that Commerce's determination should be upheld as in accordance with law and supported by substantial evidence.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Mr. Stoll, can you raise it to 3 minutes? That'll balance out the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. I'd just like to address a few points of my friends. First, the government said that this case is about whether Commerce should decide at the margins. I would respectfully disagree. In this case, the government and the petitioner already decided. They said fabricated quartz should be considered part of the domestic-like product. Once they made that decision, if we could demonstrate that they were making that product, there was no reason for the six-factor test. Your honors can interpret the statute, frankly, better than the agency, and you can interpret the word producer consistent with what they already did. Secondly, I think it's important to distinguish some of the cases that my friend from the government offered. He's talking about cases, your honors, where nobody put up their hand to say that they wanted to be producers. You might say, this doesn't matter, this is a factual issue, Mr. Stoll. But I would point out that the statute, Congress's words, specifically say that Commerce has to consider the views expressed by producers. So it's very important that in those other cases, nobody expressed their views. Here, Your Honors, at minimum we have 270 fabricators who put up their hands and asked for their views to be considered. That's a materially different issue that goes to the purpose and the intent of the statute. Third, let me talk a little bit about Eurodef, and Judge Prost, of course, was on the panel, so I defer to her, but I think there's a few important things. One, the case does not discuss production-related activities test. Those terms are never mentioned in this court's opinion, so I don't believe it's fair to say that that test has been upheld. It's never been addressed directly by this court. Secondly, this court directly addressed the statute and the intent of the statute. So you've shown that you're able to interpret the word producer. In fact, you said that the key thing is whether or not the production is substantial or important. We agree with that test. And I think on that basis, you don't need a six-factor test. The record, whether it's substantial evidence, whether it's Chevron Step 2, and I think clearly on Chevron Step 1, you can interpret that based on the statutory language and on your own holding in Eurodef. Third, we haven't touched upon substantial evidence, but I would go back to what my friend from Cambria conceded at page 41 of his brief. He already said several things that point out that there was substantial and important manufacturing. And in terms of Commerce's consideration of the evidence, we provided to you a chart in our brief where we showed all of Commerce's citations were to its own decision and to Cambria. That doesn't show that they took into account evidence that detracted from their decision. They are charged under the substantial evidence test with weighing the evidence and examining it. We're not asking you to re-examine the evidence, but they must consider the evidence. Their decision clearly was wholly one-sided and relied solely on the petitioner's allegations. For those reasons, Your Honor, I submit the case should be reversed and remanded. Thank you.
I thank all counsel. This case is taken under submission.